Welcome to my Claim Your Worthiness podcast, Intimate Conversations with Gail Jones. We all have a safe place within to create anew. In each episode, I hope to add to your inner sanctuary to strengthen the belief in yourself and your dreams. Claiming our worthiness sets the foundation for centering us back into our greatness. From this foundation, we create our most amazing lives. I'll be sharing insights and resources from my own journey and from others who are transforming their lives. Lean in and receive the wisdom shared. You are worthy of having this special time with yourself. Hello, I'm Gail Kernan-Jones here today with my guest, Christy Nelson, who will be courageously sharing at great depths and with incredible wisdom and optimism her insights on living gratefully. Diagnosed at age 33 with end-stage cancer and thriving in new ways now, 28 years later, Christy offers a unique and uplifting perspective on embracing gratefulness. She offers many practices and five key principles, which we're going to learn about today, of gratefulness for coming alive in new ways that go far beyond what many of us know about gratitude. And here's one major distinction she notes right up front. Quote, gratitude waits for something to happen. Gratefulness just waits for us to be awake. That's a really profound quote. Christy Nelson is author of the recently released book, Wake Up Grateful, The Transformative Practice of Taking Nothing for Granted. And she's the executive director of a network for grateful living. She has spent her adult life immersed in the rewarding work of nonprofit leadership, fundraising, and organizational development. In a wide variety of roles, she has helped to lead, fund, and strengthen organizations committed to progressive social and spiritual change. She has a very lengthy bio, which I'm going to tell you more about at gratefulness.org. She has worked at Kripalu, and she worked with Lynn Twist, who is very well known for the Soul of Money Institute and her book. Before we begin talking about gratefulness, I'd love to hear you elaborate on what called you to create your powerfully enlightening book right now, and a little bit more about your personal journey of reclaiming or claiming your own worthiness.
I had no idea that the book would come out right around the pandemic. During this time, it felt like it was medicinal for people, and it spoke to a deep longing that people were having, which was how to work with not having the lives we've had and necessarily getting what we want or need in life, maybe getting what we need, but not getting what we want, and learning the lessons about appreciating what we have instead of always striving to get what we want. Mm-hmm. And because our universes were circumscribed in terms of where we could travel and what we could do. And so we had to turn inward and we had to turn to what was available to us. And I think that's such a powerful landscape for transformation, for learning to lean into our own experiences and not projecting on outside sources the answers all the time, which we're so prone to do. So we had to really look to ourselves. And then all of this uncertainty. So gratefulness has become really important to me as the executive director of this organization. I felt that this was needed to help people really understand a way of life, grateful living as a way of life. What does it mean to really greet each moment gratefully and to live gratefully into all the moments we have? My own personal journey toward that, you mentioned the cancer, of course, that was hugely significant and was a stake in the ground. I've now lived almost as long since the diagnosis as I lived before, which is stunning to me.
Huge milestone.
I will reach that anniversary in about 2 years. And yeah, that will be a big day for me. And I think I learned this deep gift of taking nothing for granted, which in that journey woke me up to so much recognition of the gifts that are already in our lives that we just need to learn to see differently, mm-hmm. rather than having different things in our lives. The lesson of not taking anything for granted means if we can appreciate all of what is in our lives already, then we are able to look further outward. But why have more when you can't appreciate what you already have?
Right.
So learning that practice of really paying attention to, attending to, cherishing, savoring what's already in our lives, that's the most generative, transformative practice I know.
You say in your book, and I'm just going to quote this specific quote of yours, "My illness taught me greater empathy for the wounded places inside everyone that we cannot see, touch, or imagine, and not to take what we see of each other at face value. So many of our illnesses, struggles, and disabilities are hidden, and many people who appear to have disabilities are, in other ways, far more intact than we might be. The most important parts of us long for the sincere invitation to show themselves and be acknowledged in both our brokenness and beauty." It's just such a beautiful, profound statement. Before cancer, did you have a sense of worthiness, or did cancer alert you to areas in your life where you didn't feel worthy and you had to reclaim it to reclaim your life?
That question for me, as is true with so many women in our culture, revolved very much around my struggles with my body and my self-esteem, my self-worth, how I was in relationship to my physical body, and how I felt like I fell short of what was prescribed around me as the ideal body. And so that gap was a pretty consistent source of struggle and suffering for me, honestly, in my early years. So in my teens and 20s and early 30s, I did yoga and I was a runner and I was a vegetarian, and I was very enlightened around health issues and everything. And yet it was a constant struggle to really feel the worthiness of my body the way that it was, exactly the way that it was, and not need it to be different.
So your worthiness was more about body self-image versus an internal set of not growing up feeling enough or something like that. It was really about body image.
And I would say that not enoughness for me, everything, the body is a metaphor, right? The body is just the landscape we occupy. So for me, it's certainly connected to, if you feel entirely worthy on the inside, then it's not going to matter so much what's on the outside.
Right.
It gave permission to that interior unworthiness to have a place to focus itself. Mm-hmm. So the body then became the landscape that was my preoccupation. I didn't ever really conform to what I thought was the ideal body shape and image and everything. So it was one of my great spiritual teachings. My whole life was reconciling and reckoning with this experience of my body and feeling that, how did I bring it into congruence? Did it really reflect who I really was? And that's a deep question for all of us to work with, I think, in life, is to what degree is our body a real reflection of who we are? And to what degree do we surrender and let go? But then cancer, I took me into a completely new relationship with my body. Mm-hmm. And I emerged from my cancer journey scarred. I had 11 surgeries and I was bedridden for weeks and months. So any sense of being active or athletic or being conditioned was removed. And I was so sick and so besieged by the medications that I took in order to survive. So I had to reorient completely at 32 years old and 33 years old to a body that not only didn't conform, but was now something unimaginable to me that I needed to live inside of previously. All of a sudden, I had this body that was such a teacher,
Your words are just so inspiring. I also love this part when you talk about your surgery in your book. The surgery to remove cancer that had metastasized to my spine repaired me and readied me for treatment. But it did far more than that. It cracked me open and taught me unmitigated awe for the capacities of the body to function, to repair and recover, to heal and to carry on. It opened my eyes and heart to better appreciate the courage which so many people live their days. The human capacity for tenacity and resilience is perpetually astonishing. I learned that our bodies are never-ending blessing worthy of our full-blown, moment-to-moment appreciation and wonder, no matter what. How inspiring is that, to take such a painful journey and to teach people the power of tenacity and resilience? And I'm sorry that our listeners can't see you, because you look so beautiful and so fit and so healthy. It's even more inspiring to see you. You also say, "Grateful living reminds you that the body is worthy of your most grateful regard and is always available to receive your care. No matter how broken you might feel, remember that you are always whole and you are always a source of awe just as you are. It is a hugely generative practice to bring greater tenderness and empathy to the body, yours and others." And I love that you talk about tenderness and empathy, because like you said, in your earlier years when you didn't have a great image of your body, treating it with tenderness and empathy, do you think that helped heal your body?
Absolutely. I think it would have been impossible to go through the healing journey that I did if I didn't shift quite literally 180 degrees to learn to focus on everything that was extraordinary about my body, how it was working, how it was a blessing, everything about my body that was a gift. And I love Jon Kabat-Zinn saying, no matter what is not right with your body, as long as you are breathing, there's more right with your body than wrong with your body.
Right.
And so I just kept focusing on that. What is working? Okay, all these things are not working and cancer is taking over my body on all these levels, but what is still working? And you can, there's literally an endless place to focus our attention there. And one of the chapters in the book is called Treasuring the Body as It Is. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really the lesson out of all of this, is when we don't take the body for granted, it is a miracle. It's like a shining miracle in every moment that we can move our hands, that we can, our senses work to the degree, even when we're disabled, even when we're bedridden, right. How much about our bodies is working is enough to leave us absolutely awestruck and speechless at all times.
Mm-hmm. So Christy, besides cancer, which is a big enough challenge, as you detail in your book, were there any other curveballs that sent you down to a deeper discovery of yourself and your worth? Any early childhood traumas or neglect that left you feel less than worthy?
Oh, sure. Oh my gosh. How do you survive adolescence in this country without my parents separated when I was young? When I was the oldest daughter, and my parents separated when I was an early teen. And I think for me, that was a very difficult thing to go through in my life, because it set me apart and from other people. And I had such questions about the sense of belonging and where I belonged and to whom I belonged. And reconciling that, I think, was always an incredible, rich experience for me. I'm so grateful to my parents, because they taught me so much through that, and it was courageous of them. In the moments, though, of course, as teenagers, we feel so other. We so readily feel so other and so wrong and broken. And so I took to writing when I was young, in my journal, and writing poetry and stuff that was always about the gap between who I felt I was on the outside and what the world wanted me to be on the who I was on the inside and what the world wanted me to be on the outside. That, what I would call a beautiful reckoning. It was a very rich reckoning between these, what's in that gap, and telling the deeper truths to myself became part of that worthiness, and learning to tell the deeper truths to other people.
So the deeper truths, meaning?
My vulnerabilities, all the places that are, how I had shamed my vulnerability was the great tragedy, I think, to me, and is to so many people, when really it is the thing that connects us most deeply to ourselves and to one another, because it's just the truth of life is vulnerability. And so it's such a beautiful place to dive into more authentic relationships, and our connections deepen when we share those parts of ourselves that I had so easily made wrong.
I love what you just said. The truth of life is vulnerability. I'd like to just go back for a second and just ask you, because it's such a huge topic these days, having coming out of the pandemic or moving through it or whatever. But you said that in the belonging piece, especially as a teenager, and through all the isolation many of us have felt and are continuing to feel, what have you learned about belonging, that some wisdom you might have on belonging and how you had to reclaim a sense of belonging? I'm sure even in the cancer journey, that's isolating in its own way. I think a lot of people are looking for a deeper sense of belonging these days.
Oh, it's so, such a beautiful question. And it's such a rich topic. Our experience of belonging is one that we can cultivate so deeply internally. I have one practice in the book, which is quite moving, I think, which is about imagining ourselves chosen and wanted by generations and generations of ancestors. It's so beautiful to imagine the miracle of being here, because over and over again, in the generations before us, people came together and wanted life to continue through them. And that wanting of life then produced life, which then wanted us, which then produced life, which wanted us. And we are the result of these choices that have been made, the belonging to our history, to that deep lineage, I think is so powerful, and really claiming that place of belonging inside our lineage is rich terrain. And then I would also say that for me, that sense of belonging to a universe that had no end. When I lay in the hospital bed, I learned a much deeper spiritual belonging than I had ever had before. Mm-hmm. I cultivated a spiritual life, an inner life, which had me feel a sense of interconnectedness, whether I was with anyone or not. Excellent. So that's another layer, which is that beautiful sense of belonging inside an embrace that is so much more vast than any of us can fathom.
Did you feel spiritual before you got cancer, or did it heighten your spirituality, or was it your saving grace?
Deepened and heightened my sense of spirituality. Mm-hmm. So important. And it was through isolation and solitude and silence that happened. It was taking me out of what I considered to be my circles of belonging, right? Who are my friends? Who are my family? Who is my community? Taking me out of that, putting me into a bed, a room I couldn't leave for weeks on end, that I couldn't even move my body from the intricacies I was on. And then having me negotiate life from that place of endless nights not sleeping. And to what do we belong in those moments? To who do we belong? Those are the richest questions and pursuits, I think.
Right.
And we can cultivate those in any time. And I think the pandemic had the ability to turn us inward and turn us towards smaller circles of belonging on one level to negotiate a larger sense of belonging.
I just want to say something on when you just said belonging, we come to it through isolation and a deeper loneliness. As I'm working on a book called Space for Grace, The Way Out Is In. And I think a lot of people are terrified of being alone with themselves.
Yes.
And it's when you learn to be alone with yourself, or have to face that aloneness, that you really break open to a whole new world.
So true.
And you just said it really beautifully, that it's such rich terrain. So what advice would you give to somebody who is afraid to be alone with themselves when you had to learn to do it so much through your hospital stays and your healing journey?
I'm such a proponent of feel the fear and do it anyway. Mm-hmm. Don't wait to be fearless about things in life. Go with your fear, lean into that, and understanding that it's those moments of courage, of facing the things that we didn't know that we could survive, that give us the bandwidth to be able to develop courage in all these other places. So I think creating moments of silence and solitude in our lives, for me, it's connecting with vastness. It's getting out for a walk and getting perspective and being alone. It's sitting in silence in the morning by myself and having contemplative practices, meditation that I engage in consistently, even 10 minutes, just to sit 20 minutes, 15 minutes with your own solitude and deepen your relationship. I would also say that there are physical gestures that are hugely significant. Mm-hmm. And one of the things when I lead meditations, I always have people put their hands over their heart. Mm-hmm. And I have people put their hands right on their chest and feel their heartbeat and feel their lungs breathing and touch yourself. So much of the pandemic left us feeling disconnected from touch.
Sure.
And yet that self-comforting, that gesture, find the gestures of self-connection mm-hmm. that are meaningful. You could put both your hands on your lower abdomen, underneath your rib cage. Where do you feel that sense? Or one hand on each. Those gestures, you can then return to the kind of courageous depths that you're able to cultivate in those moments.
Courageous depths. And then at the beginning, when you just said, connect with the vastness. So I think when people are afraid to be alone with themselves, they're focusing on the emptiness.
Yeah, it's full.
To learn that it's really vast and full, I love that it's full. So it's full. Like making friends with the solitude.
Oh, and making friends with the miraculous that you are and that the right. world is. It's miraculous. And unless we stop and are willing to get quiet and solitary, we don't have those encounters right. that change our lives forever. Because we notice, we don't take anything for granted. We notice how full those moments are rather than sure. empty.
Sure. Claiming my worthiness, I believe, helped extend my life, as three healers advised me to do. Claiming it, a lot of people have a subconscious belief around not being worthy or wanting to live. They don't know they carry that through trauma of the past. Mm. So did becoming more grateful extend yours? Do you think that that's what extended your life? Or what were the key things that you think extended your life?
I always say I'm not such a big believer in formulas. I think it's sure. different for every person. And so people would always say, how did you live and how did you survive? And they wanted to write down the prescription. And
right,
I say,
right.
it is about deepening your relationship with yourself, doing your own work. And for me, that was about celebrating what is, letting go of some of those longings for it being otherwise, so that to really be with what is in my life. And you ask a very powerful question, which is, did gratefulness, being grateful, help extend my life and help deepen my sense of worthiness? It helped enrich my sense of my life for sure. And does enriching our sense of ourselves and our life extend our lives and deepen our worthiness? I sure would say so. I sure would say sure. it's a contributing factor that's right. so worth everything it takes. Why not? Why not be grateful? Why not experiment with celebrating what is about yourself?
Right.
And trying on a sense of worthiness.
Sure. So when you just said, also another very powerful line, accepting what is and letting go of the longing for it to be otherwise. That feels like surrender. How would you say the acceptance comes, acceptance versus surrender?
This is a very interesting topic, because even as I said that, I think that our longings for the world to be other than it is, like all, sure. I'm very concerned about the state of the world. And so for me, those are very significantly important longings. But suffering, for me, the definition of suffering is wanting things to be other than they are and quarreling with what is. So being in that constant relationship of complaint or scarcity or quarreling with what is about our lives keeps us from being effective in shaping the lives we want to have. There's a powerful paradox, which is acceptance of ourselves unleashes the energy that allows for transformation.
I love that. Can you say that one more time?
Yes. Acceptance of ourselves unleashes the energy that allows for transformation. Whereas we think that we transform by constantly focusing on what needs to be different. And I believe that it's really through acceptance, through compassionate, empathetic engagement with our lives and with ourselves and with each other, that we're transformed. If you want to transform a relationship with mm-hmm. yourself or with another human being, work on deeply empathizing and compassionately accepting what is about that being, whether it be yourself or another. Climb inside the experience, lean into the understanding and the curiosity and the appreciation and love for what is, and you will transform a relationship in a way that no amount of we got to work on this. We got to work on this. We got to work on this. We got to change this. It's never going to get you there.
I love this, how you're explaining this, because so often people in the personal growth and development field that we're in, yeah. sort of, always look on fixing something as if somebody is broken.
Yes.
Instead of accepting the innate wholeness in all of us yes. and appreciating that and coming from that place of healing.
That celebration of our wholeness takes us so far on the journey of where we want to be. Mm-hmm. Whereas seeing ourselves as broken and in need of fixing just makes us feel separate, makes us right. feel wounded, makes us feel other. And that is really hard circumstances in which to transform ourselves.
I love how you talk in your book about becoming awake, and you say, gratefulness helps us be awake to what matters and to not sleepwalk our way through life. One of the most important reasons to live with gratefulness is that it keeps us connected with our deepest cares, greatest blessings, and true priorities without needing a dramatic wake-up call to remind us of them. It's really just beautiful.
I think wake-up calls are so important to heed, Gail.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like when you get a wake-up call, sure. Listen deeply to what it's asking of you. And what if we could be more in touch with what those wake-up calls are asking for us mm-hmm. more consistently in our lives instead mm-hmm. of needing them to remind us?
Right.
Because often people have these amazing, intense things happen, losing somebody, almost losing their own life, injuries, illness, all the house burning down, really difficult things that happen, divorce, loss, and losing a job, all the things that happened in the pandemic, a lot of things that happened in the pandemic.
Right.
And those wake-up calls wake us up to something that I think the more that they wake us up, the more we need to pay attention, because it means that we might be further off course. The
sure.
more they change the way that we want to live our lives, the more it's speaking to what is out of alignment about how
sure.
we're currently living.
Right.
So the invitation is, what would it look like to live in true alignment with my most awake cares and concerns? What would it look like to live in that great alignment?
No matter what is happening in our world now, know this: you are not your circumstances. Learn how to claim your internal power to thrive in Gail's 6-session coaching package, Creating a New Mindset for Thriving. Discover your hidden beliefs that hold you back. Learn empowering words and feelings that shift your mindset to create anew. Release financial setbacks and other blocks to abundance. Step into a new vision for your life with clearly defined action steps to support it. Be championed and mentored, which is a key to success. Email her at gailjones@claimyourworthiness.com to set up a complimentary 30-minute session to learn more. Gail trained with world-renowned neuroscientists to help you learn to train your brain for optimal outcomes. Check out her website, claimyourworthiness.com, especially her video on the homepage, to catch a glimpse of her expertise.
You talk about touching the body and self-comfort. One of the exercises I've done with my clients and myself is right to the body part that is injured or hurt. For example, when I was diagnosed with breast cancer, I wrote to my right breast and I asked the tumor what it had to teach me. Mm-hmm. And I really hesitated doing that exercise till 2 days before surgery. And when I did it and the answer came up, it basically said, slow down. You don't have to run anymore from a chaotic childhood and all that internal stuff. But that was a life-defining moment. And the wisdom of the body is really incredible. So
yes.
that wake-up call was a message for life.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. And you and so many people who dare to listen. So often I think we stay running so fast that we can't hear, and we
right.
ride right over the messages that are coming to us. And I think cultivating those spaces, like we talked about, to have quiet and solitude, those are the circumstances in which we can hear. We can
right.
truly listen and heed what we hear. And we need to be willing to go into that depth of relationship, Gail, as you're describing.
Sure. So can you talk a little bit more about the practice that you refer to in the book of Stop, Look, and Go?
So Brother David Steindl-Rast, who's the founder of a network for grateful living and gratefulness.org, and he wrote a book called Gratefulness, the Heart of Prayer, and he's this amazing Benedictine monk who's turning 95 next week. He's one of my mentors, and he started this organization, as I said. And he described when he was on Super Soul Sunday with Oprah, she asked him, how do you practice grateful living? And he said, you stop. He's Austrian. You look and you go. And it's, oh, okay. Wow. That's amazing. And I thought, we need to really figure out, break that down and talk about what that really means.
Mm-hmm.
And so how I describe it to people is, we have to stop for presence. We have to be present in order to live gratefully. But before we go, we don't just get present and then move on. We have the opportunity to look. And what we look for is what around us engenders that sense of appreciation. What around us inspires it? What within us? What do we find? And if we can't find things readily, which is often true for many of us going through mm-hmm. difficult things,
mm-hmm.
then we have to look for perspective. And perspective is one of the key things in living gratefully, because it's hard to live every moment gratefully unless we have those perspective enhancements that help us remember what's true, that it could be otherwise. How lucky am I? I get to do this. I don't have to do this. There's so many incredible ways to do that. So you look for opportunity, you look for perspective, and then you go based on that. And one of the things I'll just say really quickly is what I've really come to see that is grateful living or gratefulness, living gratefully as a way of life. Gratitude celebrates the green lights in life. Grateful living celebrates the green lights, the yellow lights, and the red lights in life. And that is the stop, the look, and the go. So the green light is go. Sure. But the red light actually has us stop, and there's such purpose to stopping.
Right.
And the yellow light is yield, look around, be aware of your circumstances. If we just go stop to go, you get hit by a car. Like you just without looking. So the looking is so critical, and yet we want to often skip that, or we want to skip the red light. Those are the key parts of life. And grateful living finds merit and value in all those stopping, looking, and going places. And it's just a beautiful way to live. Stop, become present, be aware, look, become alert, be attentive to what's around you, and go, be awake, be alive.
It's so interesting. This is so important right now, where everyone's coming out again into the world in new ways. And really reconsidering how they want to go. Do you have any perspective on that?
I do. I think that in our culture, we just want to bust out. Oh my God, back to shopping. Yay. Like I think, what are the remedies that we're used to? I think it's so important to ask ourselves the question, what did we learn? What do we want to bring with us? No matter what was difficult, everyone I know had something profound happen in this last year and a half that woke them up to what was important and truly important. And some changes in rituals, some changes in behavior that and relationships that we had better carry with us, or else we're going to the same old imprinting and the same old, you know, patterns and habits that deserve to be more examined. And I think stop, look, and go really encourages that. The examination stage, the looking stage is, what do you want to bring with you as you go? What's important? So not to shy from that is so critical.
And in going now, especially, what pace do we want to go at?
Great question.
On page 124 of your book, you write about self-befriending. Why is this so critical to living gratefully?
It's hard to live gratefully and skip yourself. Learning to befriend ourselves, and I like to say, don't begrudge, befriend. Don't belittle, befriend. Whenever we get into those, don't bemoan, befriend ourselves. This is so important because it's the starting place for everything. And it's like they say, if you can't love yourself, how can you love someone else? If you can't be grateful for yourself, how can you be grateful for things outside of you? So really, you are living the greatest miracle there is, which is your own life. It's a miracle that you're here. Miracle.
Right.
And to celebrate, that's the befriending, the self-befriending, which is, it's celebratory and it's also tender, is self-befriending.
I love this line in your, the question you ask in your book. If you were to stop waiting and treat yourself exactly as you long to, what new opportunities would arise? Pretty empowering.
Because we put off so much. I'll do that when I'm this, when I'm that, when I can do this, when I, what if you stopped waiting?
Right.
And that's the wake up now. Be awake now to all the opportunity that currently exists for you. And we don't notice opportunity unless we're present. Unless we're really present in the moment and really cultivate that practice of being more fully here and more fully awake. And then you notice opportunity, and opportunity is always there, always. So you listen for opportunities. You allow yourself to lean into opportunities. It's beautiful.
Excellent. I love that. Opportunity is always here.
Always present.
Right.
In great abundance, actually. Yeah.
Can you discuss the power of emotions, feeling them, welcoming them, and becoming vulnerable? We talked about this at the beginning a little bit, how it's our richest lives, but can you just elaborate a little bit more on feeling and welcoming all of our emotions?
It's one of the most powerful acts of self-befriending is actually, it's so radical to not just accept your emotions, but to actually on some level trust your emotions, to trust that there's wisdom in the emotions that you feel, that your upset may really have incredibly important lessons for you, that your frustration may be driving you toward an important new solution, that your sense of hurt or loneliness or overwhelm, all of it may be guiding you to significantly important changes, deeper ways of being, all of that. But when we shun those things or make them wrong and say, oh, I should only feel happy. I'm not really much of a happiness person, by the way. I think happiness is a really hard prescription. It's a pretty shallow prescription and it's highly vulnerable and fleeting. Like it just doesn't stick around. And yet people will say, are you happy? And I'll say, I don't know if I'm happy, but I'm grateful. I'm really grateful. Now, I would rather be grateful because that's something I can cultivate a deeper experience of and it can be lasting. And joy, same thing with joy.
Right.
Joy is a very powerful, lasting interior experience. Unconditional. Right. They're both unconditional, joy and gratefulness. But so I think those are great places to aspire, to live gratefully, to live joyfully. But the way that we get there is not making our other experiences wrong.
Right.
And rushing past those, but actually welcoming them, embracing them.
Right.
What can I, like, same thing with you said you asked of your cancer, what do I have to learn from you? What do you have to speak to me about right now? If I trust you, I'm going to engage with you. If I trust you, I will engage with you. So I lean into you for further insight and wisdom. That's what our emotional lives, I think, are really wanting.
Emotions really are our friends, all of them.
So powerful. They're our teachers.
Sure. I want to talk a little bit more about receiving. So in my own book, Cancer is a Love Story, Developing the Mindset for Living, I note that many breast cancer survivors are in the helping professions. I was told that by many healers, and that they often overgive to others, sometimes at the expense of their own health. And you noted in your own book that you had to receive through your healing journey, and you made a profound statement, and I just want to quote it because it really stood out. Quote, giving at the expense of receiving is selfish. Can you talk a little bit how hard it was for you initially to learn to receive? I know you talked through your journey, how you needed other people to help you through this. And where were you before and during and after in the whole process of learning to receive?
So good. And I think it's so resonant with so many people, this experience of I felt much more in charge when I was able to give to other people. I felt much less vulnerable when I was in a position of giving. And I realized that I had loved defining myself as a giver, and I saw myself that way. And so I was very addicted to being generous. And yet I realized that the selfishness was that I was depriving other people of the ability to feel their own worthiness in gifting me something that I needed and giving to me. I never let myself slow down enough or be vulnerable enough to ask, to receive fully, to appreciate, and therefore the people who gave to me never got to feel gratitude from me because I never fully received everything. So that beautiful reciprocal cycle of, and I think asking is in there too, knowing what we need and asking for it, asking, giving, receiving, gratefulness, all of that, how that all spins into itself is so rich.
And that we're worthy to have our needs met, right?
Oh, that's so powerful. Absolutely. We're worthy to have our needs met. And the power is, if you take any one of those four pieces out of there, it doesn't really work. So the gratitude is so important as the asking. The receiving is so important as the giving. They're all in this mix together. And feeling appreciated and appreciating fully out loud what we're receiving is such a critical medicine to ourselves and to other people. And yet we often skip that one too, because being grateful can make us feel more vulnerable, which is right. Why we often don't want to receive, is to feel, but there's no indebtedness there. There's right. Just beauty. There's this beauty in the truth of life, which is we all have needs and we all have resources to give.
Talk a lot in your book about the power of listening as it relates to gratefulness and worthiness. You have some profound quotes in the book about it, which seem especially important now in the fast-paced, distracted world of social media and texting, particularly the costs. Or as you say, the golden rule can become the grateful rule. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that? Mm-hmm. Listening and being more present in the power of that right now?
The grateful rule, just to pick up on that, because some people do find that so meaningful. The golden rule is give unto others as you would have them do unto you. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And what that does is it locates our experience of other people inside our own needs. Mm-hmm. So I think what instead to be willing to engage in the way where we really actually ask the questions of other people, what do you need? What makes you feel loved? What helps you feel most alive, most worthy? What helps you feel most connected? To ask other people, not to give other people what does those things for us.
Right.
That is so misdirected. And if you've ever been in a loving relationship where you're constantly giving somebody something, it's like the five languages of love. You're constantly giving somebody something that you think they should need, or you wish they would need, or you thought they needed, or they used to need. They may not need it anymore or like it anymore. And so suddenly you're never hitting the mark, so to speak. You're actually never making them feel the love that you want them to feel. Mm-hmm. And that's tragic. So I think asking the right questions and listening deeply for what's really true for other people is the commitment that really is so generative. It changes everything.
Right. You say in your book that the feeling of being taken for granted is often healed by curiosity with these types of questions. Listening affirms the inherent worth in others in life itself. And then you also say the cost of not listening is high. It's the highest price we pay. The highest price we pay is real love. And many of us aren't really taught how to listen.
No. And I would say if there's a quality to learn, to cultivate that has riches beyond riches to share with us forever in our lives, it would be listening. And I think we've talked now about interior listening to ourselves, our intuition, our instincts, to listen to what we need, to listen to what our body is speaking to us, to listen to wisdom that we're cultivating internally, to listen to the vastness, to listen to the natural world, to listen to the earth, to listen to the sky, to listen to just tune in and attune ourselves, and then to listen to one another.
Right.
Those practices yield so much, and we have to be available, because if you're not available, don't ask a question.
Right. Oh, I love that line.
If you're not there, don't ask a question, because no one's going to give you the answer that is meaningful because you're not available to receive it. Mm-hmm. So unless you're truly present, it's not really very worthwhile to ask a question, but get present so that you can listen, and then everybody becomes wiser and more connected.
Right. There were two other questions in your book that I really loved when you're listening to someone. And this reminds me of worthiness, because a lot of times the reason people don't feel worthy is because they weren't seen, heard, validated, or acknowledged as children, especially those first 7 years of life when we're forming that sense of self. But you say, when you're in a conversation with somebody else, what would make you feel seen and understood right now? I love that. Mm-hmm. And then being present to listen. And the other one I love is, and this takes a lot more thought when you're approaching somebody, what would be meaningful to you as an outcome of this conversation?
Especially when it's a hard conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're often not operating wanting the same outcomes. So if you're driving toward a particular outcome, and the person you're engaged in communication with is longing for a different outcome, you're never going to succeed. So mm-hmm. you may think you succeeded in having this hard conversation. But meanwhile, unless you understand what is successful for this other person, like for me, I may be trying to go from 1 to 10. Oh, I want peace and harmony immediately. And the other person is saying, I just want to surface difficult stuff and be able to sit with it for a while and take a pause. So then I'm going to feel like I failed miserably if we don't get to harmony. And I'm going to try to push that other person past harmony, into harmony, past surfacing their difficult feelings. So those reaching that kind of clarity, you don't have to agree, but you have to understand what the other person is really wanting.
It's a whole other way of nurturing a relationship, whether it's business or personal. I also like this section in your book on the gifts of relationships. You say the relationships in our lives are gifts, not guarantees. We all may be lovable, but having truly loving relationships is a privilege. You talk a lot about privilege in your book. Can you elaborate just a few minutes here?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. I think it's so important to feel the privileges of our moments and our lives and everything that is in our life, because Jane Kenyon wrote a beautiful poem. She died of cancer. She wrote a poem called Otherwise. And knowing that in any moment it could be otherwise. And so to not feel the things that are available to us as privileges, as gifts, is to in some way possibly take them for granted. Because then we assume that they're ours. We assume that they're going to stay in our lives. I can tell you, not remembering that not everyone has access to what we have access to is a really important thing, and that we didn't used to, and we might not again. Okay.
Can you just clarify that a little bit?
Yes.
Christy, having access to the other person. Can you just,
So you have a relationship in your life right now that you treasure. Mm-hmm. You didn't always have that relationship.
Okay. Right.
Probably true. And you will not always have that relationship because someone is always going to die. Something's going to happen. You're not always going to have that person. The moment that you're with anyone and the love that you share is a privilege of the moment. It's a privilege mm-hmm. allowed to you by this moment and this person and their choice of you. And the truth is, there are a lot of people who can't find closeness and intimacy in their life. So to consider intimacy a privilege is to want to nourish it and to want to tend it and to not take it for granted, because it might not always be there and not everybody has it. So it's a beautiful gift.
Right. Just curious on not a lot of people have the ability to be close and intimate. Is there one huge insight you have on that? Is it a humbling experience? What do you think help somebody become more open to being close or intimate?
The first word that came to mind was humility, which is interesting that you said humbling right away, because I think there's nothing that gets in the way more than not being humble. And I think being grateful and being humble are very tied to one another. Gratefulness is also a key to intimacy, to truly appreciate the opportunities that being close with people allows us. That's so I would say humility and being grateful really go very much hand in hand.
Okay. And I just have to share this one other quote. This is just a gem. There's so many from your book. To be chosen is a blessing. Allow people to know how blessed you feel by their choice to sustain a connection with you. That is just absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm. We don't do that very often, do we?
No, we don't.
It would nourish so much every single day. And I've talked with quite a few parents with their children about how do you nurture relationships with family when family is a given.
Right.
And that is such a beautiful rule for families as well, to let people know that you feel really privileged by their choice to be in connection with you, because there are a lot of broken families who don't maintain connection with each other.
Could you just share with us the 5 guiding principles of gratefulness that are in your book?
Sure. I love those. I just finished teaching a course on these and they're really beautiful, and I'll read them, and each one stands alone and they're very provocative. But the first one is life is a gift. When you greet each moment gratefully, you are always receiving. So that is wonderful because gratitude, that's where gratitude waits for something good to happen. Grateful right. living, you're always aware that you're always receiving. Right. Everything is surprise. When you open to wonder, opportunities abound. And that affirms what we were saying before. Opportunities are always there. We need to open to curiosity and wonder to see them. Sure. The ordinary is extraordinary. When you take nothing for granted, life is abundant. Mm. And that is the truth. And experiment with that one and you'll see it's true. If you take nothing for granted and you see every ordinary thing is extraordinary, you'll never be the same again. You'll never lack. You never want for something. Appreciation is generative. When you tend, what you value thrives. And that's so critical because it's actually saying it's active. You tend what you tend your relationships, you tend the things in your life, your values, what you care for, and they thrive. And then the final one is love is transformative. When you embrace the gratefulness of life, your heart overflows. And beautiful. I will say that for me, gratefulness, I love to describe as the gratefulness of life is everything. So gratefulness is when you greet the gratefulness of life with gratefulness of heart. Hmm. Unapologetically in all moments, that the gratefulness of life unfolds and you greet it with gratefulness of heart. You don't come with just a little bit of yourself. You come full-hearted and wholehearted into life, leaning into all like those emotions we talked about that might be difficult. Mm-hmm. And you will live a much richer, more well life mm-hmm. when you live that way.
Sure. Thank you. Beautiful. I love that. Greet the fullness of heart.
Yes.
Really.
Greet the gratefulness of life with gratefulness of heart. It's very intentional. You're right.
Just a little bit here on grief. I know you've lost many friends in your cancer journey and you've worked in hospice as well. Mm-hmm. You say the doorway to grief is connection to empathy and joy. And I love how you quote Winnie the Pooh, how lucky I am to have something that makes saying goodbye so hard. And then you wrote, I carry grief as an evident blessing of having loved and been loved. Are there any other insights you'd share with anybody now who may have recently lost a loved one? Mm.
Yes. I love the Valerie Kaur, K-A-U-R, her quote. She says, joy is the gift of love and grief is the cost of love. Something like that. So if we don't commit to grief, we don't get the joy. We have to love so fully that grief hurts. We have to appreciate what we have so fully that we're willing to pay that price of the grief, knowing that grief can only be felt in direct proportion to the things that we've been grateful for. You don't grieve the things you didn't love. You don't grieve the things you weren't grateful for. So to right. grieve is, I like to hold it as a privilege, and it's an honoring mm-hmm. of that which you've lost. Mm-hmm. Such a deep honoring of that which you've lost. My mother just died while I was writing the book, and it was so painful.
Sorry.
Yes, it was so painful and really terribly hard. And I know that the amount of grief I carry for her is such a testament to my love for her. And that she feels it.
Beautiful.
She knows it as such, yeah.
Really beautiful. When you heard these words from your oncologist, it changed your life. And your oncologist said to you, quote, you'll never be out of the woods, unquote. And how did that change your life, hearing those words?
It made me embrace being mortal. It made me embrace being in process. Not having answers, living with uncertainty. It made me recognize that living with uncertainty is the truth of all of our lives all the time, actually. And that to never be out of the woods, I thought, oh my gosh, how could that possibly be? And I realized, oh, that's life. That's how right. we all live. We all live with not knowing. We all live with mystery. And how do I befriend? That was right. really the beautiful quest for me.
And I love this other line in your book, opening myself to pleasure became my one decision. And I have a sense that you really see life through a joy lens.
I do, for the most part. It doesn't mean I don't struggle. Let's be real. I'm always going to be right. real. I think it's really important that there's things in life which make me anxious and make me incredibly sad and things that are really trying and challenging. And yet I know I'm able to feel grateful in the midst of all of that. Gail, and that's what makes the difference is right. I can return to gratefulness whether I'm feeling grief, sadness, anger, anxiousness, whatever it is, they coexist. Whether I'm ill, whether I'm whatever it is,
right.
I can still feel grateful. And that's such a grounding, beautiful place to be.
And you talk a lot about how it's a practice.
It's a practice.
It's an intention. Yes. You also talked about power of community. And you said, the Grateful Heart wants to be expressed and shared. It wants to be lived. It recognizes our interconnectedness as its shared home and wants to benefit others. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you're, is that part of the reason why you're doing the work you do now as the executive director? To feel a sense of community and
absolutely.
To bring you.
Absolutely. And I think that it's also why I work as a volunteer for the benefit of others who are less fortunate than I am, is that I want to uplift. It's not just myself that Grateful Living wants to uplift. I want to uplift and be part of uplifting others and creating as much well-being for the whole human population. And that's a real, that's a blessing in my life, is to recognize that our interconnectedness doesn't mean, it means that not one of us, our well-being alone is enough. It's about right. helping to ensure the well-being of the whole.
It's interesting you use the word uplift, because I would, in summarizing your book, I would just say it is one of the most uplifting books I've ever read.
Wow, that is so meaningful. I can't even tell you how much your appreciation means to me. Thank you.
I'd like to conclude with a quote that ties in with worthiness, and then ask if you have any takeaways for our listeners here. But you say, living gratefully, we recognize that we are offered no guarantees in life, and there is little we can count on besides this very moment. But this moment is the most significant gift we have, and to love and love fully in the inevitability of loss is to shape a life worthy of our big hearts. It's really beautifully said. Are there any takeaways you have for our listeners today that you want to make sure they take in?
I would say, this is your life now. This is it. And this is what we've got. And to live without taking anything for granted is to steep ourselves in the here and now, and in the gifts and blessings that we have available to us. And so love, go forth and love wildly and fully and wholeheartedly and unabashedly, and make a fool of yourself with love. love your whole life. Love other people. Love, experiment with loving, because there's no way to love too much. And experiment with that. We're so used to holding ourselves back, thinking that it makes us safe. What if the opposite is true? And we just need to be willing to take the risks to let ourselves, our hearts fly out there with abandon and see what happens. And I assure you, great things will happen.
It's really beautiful. Thank you so much for those inspiring words and other insights from your brilliant book, Wake Up Grateful, The Transformative Practice of Taking Nothing for Granted, which is now available at Bookshop, which is Indies Book Purveyors, Barnes & Noble, and Amazon. To learn more about Christy's work as Executive Director of a Network for Grateful Living, go to gratefulness.org. There are also many daily meditations and practices for expanding in gratefulness on that site. Again, Christy, thank you so much for today.
Gail, you have been such a joy. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining me on our journey today. I am so grateful you are part of my podcast community, where it is my dream that by claiming our worthiness together, we can more impactfully shed our light and love on this world. In future podcasts, I'll be sharing more stories of hope and unlimited possibilities for creating anew. You can also follow me on Instagram or on my Facebook page. I also hope you'll be inspired to share my podcast with your friends. Together, we are stronger. Blessings, Gail.
Instagram and Facebook at Coach Gail Jones.